This is Karen Brewster, and today is March 8th, 2022, and I'm here in Fairbanks, Alaska with Mary Nordale at her home for the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act Project Jukebox, and Bill Schneider is here with me as well. So thank you, Mary, for letting us come visit you today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And I did an interview with you back in like 2000, where we talked about your life and growing up here in Fairbanks and your career and all those kinds of things. I had to remember. Yeah, I had to look it up because I knew I had talked to you before, but anyway, I'm not going to repeat all that.
Fine.
Or you don't have to repeat all that.
Good. I'd rather just talk about land claims.
Yeah, so that's exactly. Let's talk about land claims. So where does that part of the story start for you?
Well, it starts at the very early stage of the development of the land claims legislation back in Washington. At the time I was working for Senator Bob Bartlett, Alaska's senior senator, and I had been in conversation with Bob
Bennett?
Bennett, yes. He was at that time head of the
the BIA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm having such a time here.
We'll get you greased up.
Okay.
Going.
All right. And he was he really bent my ear on the subject. He said one of the things you have to do is to figure out a way to deal with heirship. Now, heirship is a very delicate subject in terms of land claims and reservations, that kind of thing, because the standard mechanism that the Department of the Interior used to deal with land claims was simply to create a reservation and vest interests in the reservation in all of the people who lived on the reservation who were part of the tribe, and make no way in which you could divide up those interests. They have to stay all one, so it's basically not an economic unit. It's very hard to make a business on a reservation and develop ideas on a reservation because it takes the whole group of interested people to assent to whatever it is in order for it to move forward. And just like every other community, the people on the reservations have very different ideas, and they are, you know, they pursue their own ideas. They don't pursue your ideas. So it makes it very difficult for people to create viable businesses or whatever it is they want to create on the reservation because of the lack of ability to get consents.
Mm-hmm.
So the I was at the time going to night school at George Washington Law School, and thought I knew everything there was to know. And I had been thinking about this because Bob Bennett had been so insistent, and I just was crazy about Bob. He was a wonderful man, and he did so much for the people of Alaska and the BIA up here. He established a totally different way of communicating. I mean, he was really wonderful. And of course, he understood because he was a Rosebud Sioux. And so he knew what the dangers were in terms of being able to create separate interests and in the land resources of the reservation, people of the reservation. So it made him, he really talked very sternly with me. And because I admired him so much, I believed every word he said, and of course I knew in advance what difficulty the reservations had. Because we have one reservation in Alaska, and that's at Metlakatla. Excuse me, and I had been dealing with a problem that the people in Metlakatla were trying to deal with. They were trying to get a wharf or dock built so that they could get direct water shipments to Metlakatla. Mm-hmm. Shipments by water, and the Japanese were willing to do it if they could get access to the timber resources on the island, harvest the timber, and take it out by water. And in order to do that, they needed a dock. So I mean, it was a fair thing. Well, it never succeeded because the Interior Department wouldn't allow the harvesting of the timber.
And so that timber was not on reservation land?
It was on reservation land.
And the Department of Interior still had control over it?
Oh, yeah.
So was Bennett head of BIA for the whole United States, or he was the head of the BIA in Alaska?
Both. Oh. He started out, I first got to know him when he was area director here in Alaska. And we were trying to work on a housing project. And then he got transferred and he was named as commissioner of the BIA.
You mentioned that you were going to law school.
Yes.
How did that fit into this?
Well, I was going to get there.
Oh, okay.
I will get there. So anyway, the Interior Department was pushing the Alaska delegation in Congress. That's Senator Bartlett, Senator Greening, and Congressman Rivers to do something, you know, introduce legislation to create a mechanism for settlement of land claims. And the reason for that was that the oil industry was looking very hard at Alaska and wanting access to the oil and gas resources. And so it was necessary that the land that would belong to the Alaska Native people be designated and defined, and you know, the selections move ahead. The state was able to move ahead with its selections because of the Statehood Act. But the natives were not, because they didn't have that kind of authorization. So we had to get a bill
Do you want to take a break?
No.
Okay.
We needed a bill that would authorize native land selections. But once the lands were selected, it was the intent of the Interior Department, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, that those lands would become reservations. And Bennett had been very, very definite that he didn't think the idea of reservations, the way they were administered by BIA, would be of great benefit to the Alaska people. And he wanted some way of influencing the development of legislation that would yield a form of ownership and administration and utilization that would be a benefit to the Alaska Native people. And of course, that's what we wanted. So, in response to the urging of the Interior Department, the representative staff of the three members of the Alaska delegation met in Senator Greening's office to talk about what we do. And present at the meeting, I can't remember everybody, but from our office, Bartlett office, was Mary Lee Council and me. From the Greening office, there was Herb Beezer and Laura Olson. And from Ralph Rivers' office was Don Greeley. And I think there may have been one or two more. Anyway, we gathered in Senator Greening's office and we're talking about this. And because I was in law school, I thought I just knew about everything. And I proposed that instead of going for reservations, because I'd had this awful experience with the Metlakatla situation, that instead of using the reservation form of common ownership, that we establish corporate ownership, and the people on the reservation would, or not reservation, but the people holding the title to the land that they had selected would hold it in the form of a corporation, which would enable them to issue shares of stock in the corporation, which gives them, or would give them, an economic interest in the entire land mass selected, but would not make it impossible for the land mass to be used, because the direction and the management of the land would be in the hands of a corporation, the shareholders would elect a president and a board of directors. And so there would be a means of one, forming a common idea and figuring it out, two, putting it to shareholders through the directors and a shareholders meeting. I mean, you had a mechanism for making decisions which would further the benefits to the people through use of the corporation's assets. And everybody in the meeting bought into it. And I explained to them about my conversations with Bob Bennett. And so they understood, and they knew Bob. And so we decided to go with that model, Well, I then went on to other things, and I didn't have much to do with it. And it was the further development of the idea of corporations instead of reservations owning the land. And it was an idea, apparently, whose time had come, because while the Interior Department was just blowing its stack all over the place, the people who were actually working on the legislation, trying to bring it to shape for introduction and shepherding it through Congress, knew, most of them had worked with on reservation troubles or matters for other states. So they knew what kind of difficulty the people on the reservations have in getting anything economic going on the reservation, unless the Interior Department thinks it's a swell idea. So they don't have really much choice.
Yeah.
It's either, you know, take what the Interior Department is willing to agree to, or take nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no further business, but I did have the pleasure and self-satisfaction of seeing the idea of corporations take life and move forward. And we now have in Alaska, what, 12 corporations, something like that? And prosperity among many of the corporations that we never expected, or the people had never expected, and had no way of figuring out how to obtain that kind of prosperity. And the corporations have been model citizens of Alaska, I think. And and it's a form, interestingly enough, I think, that the Native people found easy to understand and easy to move forward with. So I've always felt that the meeting that we had way back when bore more fruit than I had ever anticipated. And now I know a lot of people claim that they had that corporations were their ideas. And to some measure, they're probably all right, because all I had was a very bare bones, legalistic idea, and it needed to be fleshed out and made into something that would really be workable. And the people who did the fleshing out and making workable worked very hard to make the corporations, bring them to existence, get the bill passed through Congress, and the people educated enough in the utilization of the form of corporations so that they could make a success out of them.
Well, I can see how Bennett had an influence on you, but how did you come upon the idea of this corporate structure? Was there...
Well, he was pushing me.
He was.
He pushed me, and he said, you've got to come up with an idea that will make it possible for the people in Alaska to use the corporate, use the, their lands and have businesses and do whatever is necessary to be done in order to have a prosperous life. And he didn't mention corporations, but I started thinking about it, and the only form I could think of was a corporate form. Because corporations are basically democratic in their form, and if they're used in a democratic fashion, they are very strong, and they carry out the will of the people. It's a majority rule, mm-hmm. of course. Not everybody is totally satisfied, but when you have a corporation working as it should, it really works. And you know, the annual meetings that now are held are models, I think, of what you can do through using a legal structure that had never been tried before. But it was Bob Bennett's pushing on me that I started thinking hard, came up with the concept of corporations instead of reservations. And those at the meeting, this little meeting that we had at the very beginning in response to the Interior Department's pressure, then it came out. Then everybody at the meeting bought into the concept because it made sense. And so it was a fundamental concept that then was fleshed out by others who came in to represent various groups of natives.
And so did you, after that meeting, did you take this idea back to the senator and you started working?
Oh, sure.
And yeah. What was his response?
Oh, he was fine. He was fine with it. You know, he didn't have a problem with it. None of our members of the delegation had a problem with the idea.
So who started working on the language for the legislation? Did you work on that?
No. I'm trying to think who was in the office. I'm not sure. I can't.
Was it somebody in Bartlett's office, or who initiated it, or some, one of the other members?
I think it was, it would have been somebody in a three-person group working on it. One from each of the delegate office. And it was Don Greeley from Ralph Rivers' office. And I'm not sure who it was from Greening's office. I kind of think it might have been Laura Olson. And from our office, strangely enough, I never really participated in it any further. I wish I could remember what year it was.
Well, that was my other question, is do you remember what year it was?
Yeah. And I'm not.
Well, Bartlett died in 68.
Right.
Right, so it had to have been before then.
Yes. 64 was the earthquake,
mm-hmm.
and I was working a lot on the earthquake.
And you were in law school,
yeah.
You said you were at night
yeah.
school.
Right, and I graduated from law school in 1966.
So that tells us 65, 66, somewhere in there, maybe?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
I think it's interesting, your experiences with Metlakatla people and the reservation there.
Oh, I still get angry when I think about it. It was... it was so, apparently, so typical of the BIA and the Interior Department of Solicitor's office in the Interior Department to reject economic opportunities that would require the people living on the reservation, the Indians or natives, entitled to the economic benefits of whatever was going on.
Yeah.
They either had to do it Interior's way, or they didn't get to do it at all. Because the reservations had no way of generating their own money. And that was one way that the Interior Department managed to maintain control. They had money, and they could give the reservations money to invest in whatever it was, as long as the Interior wanted them to do it. But if the Interior Department felt that it was not a good idea, it was a dead idea. Just never got.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the people of Metlakatla were justifiably irritated with the Alaska delegation, because we were hamstrung. We had no way of dealing with the Interior Department at that level. So, you know, it was so frustrating.
I bet.
It just it still gets to me.
Yeah.
And I think that you will find that if you look around to the various reservations, I don't know however many that there are in the United States, that the real businesses that if the people have businesses, they're established off reservation. Mm. So that the people who establish them own them. They're not just servants of the Interior Department. I think it would be wonderful if every reservation established a corporate structure, and it wouldn't have to destroy the reservation, because it could be part of the structure of the reservation, but at least it would give a way for the people living on the reservation to have businesses, to engage in economic activity that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do. Anyway.
We were talking earlier, I just read something that had refreshed my memory about the BIA and its control over natives in Alaska had to approve the legal counsel that the tribal organizations wanted to use. As late as the 1960s, they were still in control that way.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised, and the reservation story is the same, that BIA had so much power.
Yes. And as I recall, I think it was with this Metlakatla thing. I talked to the council for Metlakatla, and I got so mad at him, I was about ready to kill him. But he refused to do anything, and he made a slip in talking to me, and he said, well, I've got another client who needs something from the Interior Department, and they won't get it if I push too hard on Malacatla. Which, you know, is just terribly improper by an attorney, and but in a way you can understand why. He knew that the Interior Department wasn't going to bend and let the people of the, on Metlakatla harvest those trees. So that was a dead issue, and he knew it, and I didn't. I was still just fuming. But he basically did nothing for the people, their own attorney. And he had been told, you know, if you fight us on this, you're not going to get anywhere, and you'll lose on other everything else you're dealing with. Because he'd made a career out of being an attorney for Indians and Alaska Natives. So, I don't know, it was just messy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you recall Barry Jackson and any role he might have played in land claims?
Oh yeah, I remember. But I had left Bartlett's office. By the time Barry and a whole lot of people were working on the legislation. So I never had any direct contact with Barry at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Later we became partners.
Yeah, I was thinking you were law partners, weren't you?
Yeah, for a while. Mm-hmm. And he was very very assertive about his role in getting corporations, and I don't think I ever told him about Mindball, but I don't know. You know, I just, you know,
yeah.
I didn't want to get into a fight about it.
Sure.
So, I mean, I knew what had happened, so I didn't care. But everybody else was very, very proud of what they had done, and I think justifiably, because once you took on the corporate model as your structure for handling the land and the other assets, and the Alaska Natives were getting money as well from the federal government, you needed to pursue it to fruition. And there really was no other way in which the Alaska Natives could be convinced to take on. They wanted the land, but they didn't want to take it with the Interior Department control.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with Evan Hobson one time. He was from, you may remember, from Barrow, whatever it is now. I still haven't learned how to pronounce its new name correctly. And his eyes just flashed. And he said, nobody's going to put me on a reservation. And there was absolutely no reason why he should be treated as someone who was incompetent, because that's basically the fundamental idea of reservations, is that the American Indians aren't competent. Well, years have passed and the Alaska Natives have benefited dramatically from education and experience and other opportunities. So they understood a lot more about the what reservation life might be like, and they certainly, like Eben, was so determined he wasn't going to be on a reservation. But they wanted to live on their lands, lands they knew, from which they harvested their food. It was home.
One of the key provisions of the Act itself abolished Aboriginal title and Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights. And I think that's been pretty contentious in terms of Native people and
yes.
rural people in general.
Well, what it did was, and I'm not sure it was a wise thing at the time, but at the time there was a lot of pressure that if the Native people, as I recall, if the Native people were going to get all this land and the white people were not, then the state law had to govern the way in which fish and wildlife were managed and controlled for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the natives had lived for thousands of years managing their hunting and fishing seasonally and with great capacity for hunting in a way that preserved the species, whatever they were hunting, and same with fishing. And of course, the pressure of fishing, particularly, put on the resource by canneries, by
yeah, a lot of
white people coming up and doing a lot of the fishing and the hunting. I mean, it threw everything into a a bad situation. And of course now, with climate change, we're having a terrible situation.
Right.
I'm hoping that we'll see our way out of it.
Yeah. But so those years when you worked for Bartlett,
mm-hmm.
were Native land issues coming up frequently, besides the Metlakatla one? Were there other issues that came across your desk?
Well, I didn't. They didn't come across my desk very much, and I'm kind of surprised that. Still, I'm surprised. I'm not exactly sure how Metlakatla managed to hit my desk, because there were three or four guys who were working the a lot of the issues that were faced, and some of them were the Native issues. And I don't know why it was that I wound up dealing with Metlakatla and with the Native land claims. And so I'm trying to remember when I left the office. I knew I had to get away from the office. I had gone to to work every day, all day, high pressure, gone to law school every week night. And by the time I got through that regime, which lasted 4 years, I worked for Bartlett for 8 years, but I went to law school for four. And so it was working for Bob in the daytime and going to school at night. I was really tired, and I was getting to the point where it was very easy for me to lose my temper. I was really was not functioning as well as I should have in that office, and I had to get away. So I quit, and I came back to Alaska. So I'm trying to think of what I did when I got back here.
Well, I have a note that by 68, you became the assistant and then the U.S. attorney in Fairbanks.
Oh.
But I don't know
what.
Yeah,
that was it. That was it. Yeah, that was. I talked Bob into letting me apply for, get appointed to the assistant U.S. attorney in Fairbanks. Yeah, for some reason or other, that one just escaped me.
But that was. So you left the.
So I didn't leave in 66. I left in 68.
Okay. Yeah. So, but you left while Bob was still alive and as senator.
Yes.
Left before that. Okay.
Yes. And he yes. And it was in the fall of that year that he died.
Yeah.
A dreadful loss.
Yeah.
For Alaska.
It sounds like it. But so when you were in practice with Barry Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? What was?
Oh, it was pretty miserable. It was not a good situation. You know, Barry was nice enough, but he wasn't earning the amount of money that he wanted to earn, and so. He'd just make a race to the checkbook all the time. And so he was taking a lot of money out of the firm without consideration of anybody else there. So it was always kind of tough.
And this was in the, after land claims, this was in the 70s or?
Yeah, it would have been, yes, because I resigned from the Justice Department when Nixon was elected. Because I knew I'd get fired anyway. And so I decided that I might just as well preempt the firing and go out and look for a job. And what I did was go into partnership with Barry. Which was a big mistake, but, you know, wasn't a win. It was a mistake, and it wasn't a mistake. So,
life's like that, though.
Yeah.
You
right.
Know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know Mary Alice Miller?
Sure.
Because she was involved in the early days with Nanana and land claims, wasn't she?
She was on the bench.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've heard her name associated with Kay Hitchcock and. Charlie Purvis and going down to Nanana for some of the first Tanana Chiefs meetings in the early 60s.
Well, I think, let's see, I think she worked. Now, those two names that you mentioned are people I didn't know.
Right.
And still don't know who they are.
Charlie Purvis was from Nanana and became quite supportive as an ally for the early land claims efforts in Nanana and Tanana with Al Ketzler.
Oh, yeah.
And Kay Hitchcock was somebody in Fairbanks who got involved in, as well. She taught at the university for a while.
Oh.
Taught English or something. And this is all like 1961, 62, 63, somewhere in there.
Well, I don't know when... I don't know when... What's her name became judge?
Marianne Miller?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a name I'd never heard before. So she was an early judge for a woman. Was she one of the first ones?
Yeah, one of the first women appointed to the bench. I'm trying to think. I think she was... on the bench when I came back to Fairbanks in 68.
Okay.
But she had been with the firm, I think it was Murdy's and that group.
Okay.
And and it was after
it's hard for us to get a handle on the role of people in DC who made land claims work. And so maybe there's some of those people that we haven't thought about that were working back in DC that you'd want to mention their roles.
Well, I didn't, you know, as I said, I left working before. On that, and I went almost exclusively to working on earthquake stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know anybody, and I still don't know who was working on it other than Barry, and I think there were a few other Alaska attorneys, but most of the people who were working on the land claims were coming out of Washington, D.C. law, I think.
But by 66, 67, 68, were some of the native leaders from Alaska coming to D.C. and coming to speak to the delegation and do some lobbying?
Oh, yeah. And that's how I got to know Emil Noddy, Hensley.
Willie.
Yeah, Bill Hensley. I don't know, a whole bunch of
you guys. Mentioned Eben.
Yeah, Eben was one. And I think there was somebody else from Barrow, but I can't remember now who. Not so much Southeastern. But, yeah, they were in and out quite frequently. But they were not the negotiators that were doing the dirty work back in Washington, trying to wrestle with the Interior Department, because it was a real difficult chore to wrestle with those people.
Yeah, I bet.
They were so determined. Well, their jobs depended on the maintenance of the reservation style. And you know, they were fighting for their own livelihood as well as for the native or Indians. So, you know,
that's a shame.
It's a terrible situation. It really is. You know, I think when there was the assault on the Capitol. What, 2 years ago? One of the cries of the assaulters was that this was a white man's country and they were going to have.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, you know, if there is a white-skinned person who is a citizen of the United States, that person is an immigrant or a descendant of immigrants. Why are you saying that those people that you horsed around and fought and killed and shoved off into reservations are not Americans? They were here thousands of years before their family arrived. And, you know, just, oh.
Yeah.
I just find it so distasteful when people say things like that. Mm. And, you know, and the people who of African heritage, I mean, they were dragged over here in the most despicable conditions and forced to work under horrible conditions and treated terribly. Just every time I read something, I just don't understand how people could live with themselves and treat others the way they were treated.
But I was thinking, so Bartlett supported land claims because initially Governor Hickel did not.
Well, yeah, Bob did. I think that well, Wally Hickel, he could be, you know, a pretty delightful guy, but he was very much a Republican, and the Republican Party members were very ardently supportive of the oil industry, oil and gas. Bob Bartlett was the type of a person who got to know everybody. And he loved knowing people. So his concern about getting the land claims was to get people, the people in Alaska, the natives, the legal ability to deal with the lands that they had lived on and utilized for centuries without interference, more interference than was absolutely necessary. And so, you know, it would be much more efficient if the oil industry would be managed by white people than if they had to go through tribal stuff. And of course, you know, at the time, if the natives had had only tribal operations to deal with, they would have had nothing. They would have had no economic use of the resources of their own lands. Because that's the way it worked. So,
were there people at the when you were going to law school that influenced your thinking on corporate structure?
Well, no, other than the fact that we did talk, of course, on corporations. We dealt with the legal structures and,
yeah,
you know, we had partnerships and corporations, you know, business type mechanisms. Most business structures, if you look at them, are means of accumulating capital in order to do something. And how do you manage that capital? And how do you treat the people who contributed the capital fairly? And that motivation occurs in partnerships, in corporations, and whatever. So, no, I enjoyed the courses that I took. on those issues, because I hadn't had much acquaintance with I'd been a college student and high school student. I hadn't had any training in corporations or anything. I had never paid any attention to it. So it was kind of a brave new world for me. But it was really the pressure that Bob Bennett put on me. And I don't know whether I was the only one that he was pressuring or not. We all, and I never cleared the idea of corporations with Bob until after I'd made the proposal to this group. Why put him on the hot skillet?
Well, that's why I was wondering, like, okay, you go back to your senator and say, well, this is what I proposed, then what happens?
Sure.
And he was okay with it.
Oh, yeah.
So I wonder, or if you have wondered about this, what would have happened if Senator Bartlett had lived out his term instead of Stevens getting appointed when he died?
Well, the people of Alaska would have been well served, as they had been throughout his career. The staff that he had put together would have stayed together pretty much. And I'm not sure that he would have been any different. The problem, of course, was that he was in ill health, and it's very hard to figure out how somebody who was as ill as he was could carry on a vigorous life of being a senator or a congressman. So,
yeah, I just wonder if land claims would have been different if it had been Bartlett as the senator instead of Stevens. You know, once it went into passage.
I don't think so. Bob's staff was largely made up of law students, and I don't think that Bob would have, he wouldn't have succumbed, shall we say, to the representations of the Interior Department. So I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of Monday morning quarterbacking. It's kind of a hard thing to answer, but
yeah, and it really is impossible. You don't get a good answer.
Right.
You have no assurance that no way to test.
Right.
One of the big provisions of the land claims bill is the revenue sharing. Is the revenue sharing.
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you have any idea where that came from?
No, I don't. I'm not sure. It came up after I left Bob's office.
Hmm.
And I think it was after Bob's death.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a real problem. There was a stall in the move toward designating which lands would be, you know, Barrow lands, which lands would be Kotzebue lands, mm-hmm. which would be Fairbanks land, you know, all
right.
Trying to sort out where the people had lived and where their traditional lands were.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, it became very apparent that the resources of various parts of Alaska were different, and different in kind and different in value.
Yeah.
And so the struggle for the people, say, out at Bethel would have been terrible because the resources that are there were never fully developed, and all they had was fish. And so the and I think the potential wealth that the oil industry promised, which was apparent at the time that land claims were going through, suggested that the lands that were gifted with oil or timber or whatever should be shared to some in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But where that idea really actually was generated, I don't know. And unfortunately, an awful lot of the people who worked on the bill after I left have died.
Yeah.
Age has caught up with
them. Well, often in a legislative situation in a congressional or senatorial office, as you say, there's lots of staff who do different things, and nobody gets the credit for who wrote the language for A, B, or C.
Right.
It's the senator or congressman's name on the bill.
Yeah. And of course, you wouldn't want your own name on the bill, because what power do you have? Zero. So.
Yeah, nobody gets credit for the language they drafted.
No, that's true.
So it's more like, well, who was, as you say, who was working on the native issues in that, in the different offices at the time?
Yeah. And there was a change in the offices, in the personnel,
mm-hmm.
from time to time. So I think that most of the claims for having come up with drafts of various parts of the bill were generated by people who were not on staff. That they were lobbyists for various groups. And the there were some Native organizations I think that predated the land claims,
mm-hmm.
and so they were, they hired lobbyists to work for them. So I don't know who they were.
Yeah, it's hard for us to transport ourselves back to that period of history and what was going on in D.C.
Yeah.
But it's a part of the story that is part of land claims.
Oh, yeah. And as much as the wealthy corporations are kind of resentful of having to give up some of their wealth to the poorer ones, it's a system that has worked extremely well and has made possible, I think, the statewide Native organizations that we have and that function so well. If you have you had a chance to talk with Emil Noddy and
mm-hmm.
Bill Hensley,
mm-hmm.
those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a couple presentations by them that we recorded.
Good.
Karen's recorded.
Because they were very deeply involved and they were smart young men.
Mm-hmm. But as you say, a lot of the dirty work was being done by lawyers in D.C.
Yeah.
And the wording on the different bills, which there were a lot of versions of the bills. I don't know that the native leaders in Alaska were writing out those.
Oh, no, they were not. No. Yeah. And basically what they did, as I recall, and I may be misreading the situation, is that they would agree or disagree with proposals that were coming out of the lobbyists who were actually working on language for the bill. Cool. The native leaders did not come up with much.
Right. But they did go and lobby.
Well, they hired lobbyists, yeah.
But they also went to D.C. themselves, and as you said, they came through the office
expressed
their views.
Yes. And most of that was done after I left.
Right. Okay.
When things got rolling.
Pardon?
When things really got rolling.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Let's work together, guys. I sailed off.
But it is interesting, you know, once you decide on a corporate structure, then you have to decide on what the corporations will be in terms of area and population.
Uh-huh.
And it raises all of those questions.
Yeah. But in some ways it makes it much easier. Because you have a structure that is historically well understood.
Mm-hmm.
And because they bought into a structure that had ancient history behind it, not too ancient, two or 300 years of development, it was easier to slot the concepts into that structure than it would have been otherwise. If we had had the traditional reservations, I think the native community would have collapsed.
Maybe.
In Alaska, it would have been extremely difficult to keep it going.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, land claims is certainly known as sort of a turning point for political power from native communities in Alaska.
Yeah.
That, you know, they didn't have that power before land claims do now.
Yeah. And I'm convinced in my own mind, because of course it's very flattering to me, that had they gone for a reservation concept as was laid on the American Indians throughout the other states, it would have all collapsed anyway, and they would not have succeeded in making the success out of their corporations that they have made. And you know, you meet some of the young Native kids that have been to college, and they are going to college, and they are studying business and all kinds of things. They're much better prepared than anybody thought they would be able to be. But they're smart people, and there's no reason why they shouldn't, and they're doing a good job of managing their resources.
Yeah.
And they're not hesitant in buying expertise either. So, it's... I think it's worked out pretty well.
Okay. Anything else?
Of course I have to
we'll pat you on
we'll
the back.
We'll pat you on the back, right.
Well, thank you.
Well, now you'll get some credit for it.
Oh.
Thank you very much, unless there's anything else that you wanted to talk about.
No, I can't think of anything. I just think that the fact that the Interior Department, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, can't control the corporations has meant that the people who form the corporations have to draw on their own resources in both self-protection and in progress, and they are finding that their resources are huge.
Yeah.
And they're a remarkable people.
Yeah.
And they have never had the experience of just being beaten around the head as so many of the American Indians have done. Well, year in, year out, we hear tales about the Trail of Tears,
mm-hmm.
and the forced transfer of people from their homelands to strange and incompatible lands. Fortunately, the United States didn't know anything about oil and gas, and they plunked all these people, some of the richest oil and gas lands in the western states. I think it's a great irony, but I think, oh gee.
Yeah.
But it's made it very difficult for the people who got plunked down in Oklahoma or wherever to get a handle on what they were given forced to take.
Well, and you're right. Yeah, for Alaska Natives, they were not displaced that way.
That's right.
It is interesting, the Tyonek situation, that the village of Tyonek was successful in suing in order to get leasing rights, in order to get rights to lease their oil reserve.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of the early developments in the early 60s.
I don't know whether I followed that one or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Might have been earlier.
Yeah, well, by 66 it had been settled because they gave the money for AFN. So Tyonek, it was 62, 63. I don't remember when that lawsuit was.
Well, I was back in Washington, and so I didn't follow it as well as I should have, I guess.
Well, Stan McCutcheon was their legal counsel.
Uh-huh. Well, Stan was good. And he really cared about the people.
Yeah.
He didn't, he obviously wanted to make a living, but he didn't want to exploit them. He wanted to serve them.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Are we done?
I guess.
Okay.
Unless you have more questions.
No, I think we're good.